The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Back with you on Get Up, and huge news from college football that dropped just yesterday. Big Ten announcing it's going to a conference-only season for all fall sports, including football, due to COVID-19. Now, the move comes one day after the Ivy League ruled out playing all fall sports entirely. The Big Ten is the first of the Power Five conferences to make a decision on sports in the fall. And here is Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren on that call.
This is not a fait accompli that we're going to have sports in the fall. We may not have sports in the fall. We may not have a college football season in the Big Ten. And so we just wanted to make sure that this was a next logical step to always to rely on our medical experts to keep our student athletes at the center of all of our decisions and make sure that they are as healthy as they possibly can be from a mental, a physical, and emotional health and wellness standpoint.
So player health being one of the keys there, let's bring in Heather Dinich. She has done amazing reporting on this, been all over the story from the jump. And you just got off the phone with Kevin Warren. What did he tell you?
He told me that the main reason for this decision was flexibility. And he compared it to creating a family bubble. And he said, when you do that, it's easier to make more informed decisions. He said, if we're able to play in September, but there's an interruption, we have to press the pause button, it makes it easier to do this. He also pointed out, it may not be us. He said, what if we're playing another non-conference team and they have a stay-at-home order issued or they can't come and travel to one of our teams? He said, this eliminates that type of scenario.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things to consider there, especially when you talk about getting on the same page with coronavirus testing, with protocols and all of that. Now, what surprised a lot of people about this news was that there were previous talks about the Power Five working together on this. So what's the reaction that you're hearing throughout the sport as far as what impact this might have?
Well, Kevin Warren told me that every commissioner in the Power Five is going to have to do what's best for them. He said, this is a state-by-state thing. He said, my conference goes from Nebraska to New Jersey. Now, I can tell you that I had two SEC sources confirm with me this morning that their athletic directors are going to meet on Monday in what was a meeting that was scheduled long before the Big Ten made its announcement. But I'm being told that the SEC is in no rush to make a decision. They're still targeting the end of July to make any decisions like that. But it wouldn't surprise me if the Pac-12 or the ACC moved a little faster. And I'm supposed to get Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby on the phone later this afternoon. So hopefully we'll learn more then about the Big 12.
It'll be interesting to see what he has to say. He was one of those folks who was saying we're all trying to work together on this. Now, I have to ask you about the college football playoff, because you look at a scenario like this, if other conferences follow the Big Ten's lead, you've got teams playing each other, the chance for more losses, how those games impact all this. And I have to wonder, what impact will this have on the college football playoff in terms of evaluating teams?
Well, I spoke with CFP Executive Director Bill Hancock yesterday and asked him those questions. And he said, as of now, there hasn't been any change to the protocol. Again, as of now, he said, that's why we have the 13 selection committee members. He told me specifically, their task is to select the four best teams based on play on the field and schedules that conferences establish. I asked him if the CFP was ready yet to say this is how many games a team needs to get in order to qualify for the semifinals. He said they're not ready yet to go there.
Wow, imagine that. And you have to wonder how they're going to work all that out. And then once they do, the controversy that may come from that. Heather, thank you so much. And by the way, let's bring in our guys right now. Paul Feinbaum, Desmond Howard, Joey Galloway here with us. Okay, so Paul, let me start with you. We just heard from Heather on the college football playoff. There are so many complications to how they might handle a situation where everybody's doing conference play. How would they possibly be able to decide the best four teams?
The same way they always do. They make it up as they go along. I mean, I'm just laughing listening to Bill Hancock talking about, you know, we haven't altered our protocol. We don't know whether we'll have a college football season. We don't know anything. But the one thing about the college football playoff, Ryan, they're staying pat. They're not about to change. I mean, the truth is, you watch the season with your own eyes, and those 13 people presumably will sit in that room, if that's even humanly possible, in Dallas and make determinations. But what, if we have the season, they lose some of the most important elements, those non-conference games. I mean, a lot of schools have gotten into the playoffs simply by winning or even competing in a major non-conference game. Without that, they have their hands full.
Yeah, and then, Dez, as I look at this, I wonder what that impact's going to be, because without that, without those non-conference games, that can be the difference between getting in and out, as Paul mentions it. How do you think that'll impact things?
It'll impact things greatly, because that's one of the criteria that you look at when you're starting to split hairs, deciding which team should be in that top four and which team shouldn't be. You look at the non-conference schedule and the teams that they've played against, if they've taken those chances before or if they've taken those risks, whether they've won or lost the game. At that point, it doesn't even matter, because you give teams credit for going on the road and taking on stronger opponents as opposed to playing weaker opponents. So I think at this point, though, we're still early July. It's July 10th. I don't think there's anything that Bill Hancock or that group can tell us that's going to be definitive, because we're still trying to figure out if we're even going to have a season.
That's the big thing, right? We still don't know what's going to happen, even with this change. We have no idea when everything is going to happen. And, Joey, I also get to a situation of scheduling, because let's say football gets pushed a little bit. A lot of people are saying that. Then when do you have the playoff? How do you get the venues? Does this invite a lot of complications with the playoff?
Look, I don't know how you get there, but please, let's get there. Mm. Like, the playoff at the end, I think that is, you know what I mean? Like, that's the treat at the end of a season. So, you know, if we have a season, you know, I would imagine that the playoff would be as important as having the actual season. And if we look at this and say that every conference plays within their conference, I actually like that idea. I like what the Big 12 does when everyone gets to play everyone, and then we know who's the best team to come out of that conference. When you have conferences where everyone doesn't play everyone, then you get to avoid some teams. Like, say Wisconsin gets to avoid Ohio State and Michigan and maybe a Penn State in a season, it's tough to tell just how good that team is. And so I like the way we're headed. And like Paul said, we get to the end and they 13 people sit in a room and figure out who the best teams are. But I like that idea. And please don't take away the playoff.
Yeah, you got to have it. I mean, without it, I don't know how you can have a season without that cherry on the top of it. Guys, let's talk about Notre Dame. And Dez, I want to start with you. They, of course, don't have a conference. I not only wonder how this impacts their chances of having success this season long term, but what you would do if you were them.
I tell you what, Ryan, I might not be the best guy to ask this question to, because I've always felt that Notre Dame was always given like this special pass. And you know, they just enjoy this independence and that they never had to join a conference. So now if this ends up being a situation that we do have a season, and under the guidelines that people are talking now, where it's just people are playing within their conference, and they're left out in the cold because of decisions that they made not to ever join the conference when they had the opportunity to join the ACC, then I think that's their problem. And then it's coming back to bite them in the butt. So I don't have a problem with a team, a school that thought they are beyond joining a conference, and now because teams are playing within their conference, that they get left out in the cold.
Huh. So, Paul, following that reasoning, what do you do if you're Notre Dame?
Well, what you do is what you always do. You call in favors, and Jack Swarbrick, who is one of the most influential people in college football, I'm sure has already called John Swofford. For those who don't follow sports very closely, Notre Dame is in the ACC in every sport but football, because they have their own television contract.
Except
so
football,
they play
exactly.
Six conference. They play six ACC games, so they'll just add a couple more. I mean, and everyone wants to play Notre Dame, and especially the most important partner here are the television networks. You want Notre Dame on your network.
But Paul, I wonder if in this unique year they have problems with that. I know they have the connections. I know people want to play them, but we're in a very interesting year where we're talking about travel restrictions. We've got restrictions state to state. Does that complicate things for Notre Dame?
It should, but it won't because Notre Dame's guaranteed a seat at the table, no matter what table it is. So I think those things are being worked out right now. I don't think this is going to be a big mystery.
Okay. Now, last hour we hit it from the negative. You know, what's the chance, the percentage chance of a season not happening? Joey, I'll start with you. The season happening on time, what's your percentage chance there?
I got 0%. Okay. And I guess it matters, like, what you mean by on time. Because if these teams are already saying they're only going to play in conference, well, the Big Ten's saying that, you know, I was wondering, like, the Big Ten conference schedule doesn't start at the beginning of the season. It usually starts, you know, 3 or 4 games into a season. So it depends on what you mean by on time, but I don't think we have 0% chance of starting on time.
Okay, then let's change that up a little bit. This year?
Yeah, we're going this year. Ask Dez. Dez said 51% before. We're going this year for sure.
Okay, Dez, go ahead. He's so excited, yeah, he's Joey, coughing. You yeah, want to clear your throat a little bit? We'll go to Paul, come back to you.
Joey, oh, man.
Paul, what's the percentage chance? Go ahead, Joey, Dez, go ahead.
We're going to have it. Yeah, we're going to have it this year as far as starting on time. If you're talking about December, if we're going to have it, we'll start some games in Joey. That was good.
Paul, what do you think? Percentage chance we start the season this year?
I hate to interrupt the New Year's Eve party here with some realism, but you know, this is not about optimism. This is about being realistic. There's no chance the season starts on time. That's the week before Labor Day. I still think it's about a 1-4 shot at getting the season in at all.
All right. Well, there we have it. All right. Well, let's see what happens with that. Guys, thank you so much. And let's talk about this. The most important player in the NFL on a team is the quarterback. But should teams break the bank for one of them? Maybe more often than you think. We'll talk about that when we come back. Plus, Cowboys have a big name players at skill positions, but are they as good as we thought they were? Maybe, maybe not. And we'll get into that when we come back. But for now, the sneaky Hembo from Mina Kimes, who joins us next. Which is the only team Russell Wilson has not beaten in his NFL career? We'll have that when we come back. We promised you a little sneaky Hembo. Now we deliver. Here is the question. It is for Mina Kimes. Which is the only team Russell Wilson has not beaten in his NFL career? And we brought in Dom for a little moral support. Mina, what say
you? You got it, Mina.
Okay, so I was thinking Ravens, but then I remember in 2015 they crushed them when the offense was rolling. I think it's the Chargers off the top of my head.
Mina, you are correct.
Take that, Hembo.
It is the Chargers. Wilson has played them twice.
I mean, you know, that's playing to my strengths. So,
but still, you know, that's impressive. And by the way, Dominique was there to tear you down in case you got it wrong, so I'm happy for you.
I know.
I'm joining the winning side, man. Nobody wants to be a loser.
Let's talk a little Patrick Mahomes, shall we, now that we got Mina with us? He reset the market when he agreed to a 10-year extension that could be worth up to $503 million. It is the richest value contract in American pro sports. Now, Mina said something very interesting on Highly Questionable. Take a look at this.
If you have a good quarterback, pay him a lot of money. Find the value elsewhere. That is literally your job as a GM. These teams don't stink because they're paying their quarterbacks a lot of money. It's because they're paying the wrong quarterbacks a lot of money.
See, that is why we wanted to jump off with this discussion, because not only is she emphatic and literally pounding on the desk as she's saying it, but it's a great point, Mina. I want you to expand on that a little bit.
Thank you. Yeah, it kind of sounds like I needed a nap there or something, maybe drank too many Red Bulls. But I agree with the sentiment, even at this hour. And it's easy to have that conversation with Patrick Mahomes, right? Nobody disputes that the Chiefs should pay him, even though there, you know, are numbers showing the difficulty that teams sometimes have going deep into the playoffs or winning a Super Bowl when they allot X percent of their cap to a quarterback, something that I don't agree with. We'll get to that. It's harder when you're talking about a quarterback like Dak Prescott, who we are all now focused on as we wait for his long-term extension. That's much more open to debate. Can the Cowboys win if they still, you know, if they give him that big contract he so desires? I think they can, and I object to the notion that, you know, $33 million a year is okay, but $37 million, that is too far. You can't win once you go over that. The difference in money we're talking about is the cost of, like, a swing tackle, or not even a swing tackle, like a backup guard. Find that value elsewhere. You know what you can't find? A top 10 quarterback, which is what I believe Dak Prescott is. The Cowboys have shown they can't find quarterbacks. They, you know, basically lucked into him in the draft. Find your quarterback if he is a good quarterback, and be a GM. Like I said, you know, look for value elsewhere because it's the most important position in football, and it's difficult to replace him. It'd be nice to have a quarterback on a rookie deal. They're not going to be in a position to get one.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point because you talk about if you overpay somebody who is a so-so quarterback, man, that can really set up your – I mean, that can really set back your franchise a ways. Dom, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just so happy to have Mina on, someone with some sense. When we're having these arguments, I have to yell down at Dan Orlovsky because he says nonsense about different quarterbacks. I can't wait for Mina when they start on NFL Live to watch her destroy Dan's arguments the way that I always destroy Dan's arguments on this show. I love common sense. It's a beautiful thing to have on this show as much as possible. Thank you, Mina.
Oh, happy all right, Mr. T, I got to bring you into this discussion because you talked about this in our morning meeting. You have a very unique frame of reference on this. You've actually been through this scenario before of whether you pay big money to somebody who might not quite be all there yet.
Right, and jumping off to from Mina's point, in 2016, when I got to Miami, Ryan Tannehill, there was a lot of debate about actually how good he was. And we were talking about giving him an extension about $17 million a year, which is unbelievable. That feels like the dark ages compared to what's going on now. But my point was we could win with him. He is not perfect. And there's a mathematical formula in every GM's office, which is when you have a below average quarterback, that equals unemployment. So while Ryan Tannehill isn't perfect, you could go win with him, especially if you have to overpay a little bit. And Mina already nailed it, which is, hey, if we have to overpay, let's go take that money. Like, you know, Neek, we could go get another corner. You guys are totally interchangeable. But in all seriousness, you can find another player at certain positions, linebacker and safety, whatever it may be. But you can't win unless you have a good or great quarterback. And if you have to overpay a good quarterback, that's not ideal. But at least you still have a chance to win.
You know, I want to stay on this quarterback discussion, but first, I want to hit Neek with a question. Neek, are you interchangeable? Is that how you see yourself?
Oh, no, we're going to ignore that. He's just trying to get some attention. That's all. Sometimes people, they act out. They lash out when they feel unloved. Because I just told Mina how smart she was, and Mike was sitting there like, oh, but what about me? I'm smart, too. So then instead of waiting, he just lashed out. It happens. You do that. I'm a parent. You're a parent. You know how it is, right, Ryan?
Mina, I got to hit you on this discussion, though, with the quarterbacks. Because it's interesting. Mina, one thing we were thinking about this morning when we were talking this over was I know you cover preseason games for the Rams, and you got a quarterback like Jared Goff. And I remember all the discussion that was around him. Do they pay him? Don't they pay him? They paid him the big money. And now it looks like maybe that decision is not looking right. Does that sort of underscore your point about whether or not and what you do in these situations with these quarterbacks who aren't quite there, but you're paying them big money?
I think the Rams situation sort of sheds light on, you know, yes, you can pay that quarterback and maybe he's a guy who's dependent on the talent around him, but your margin for error does shrink when you pay a quarterback a lot of money, right? And we've seen the dissolution of their offensive line, some of the struggles there. Keep in mind, we're still talking about a team that, if the expanded playoffs existed last year, would have been in the postseason and finished in the top half in both offense and defense. But it does make life more difficult. You're absolutely right. Fortunately for Dallas, they are stacked on offense right now. I think the defense is a bit of a question mark, but they have the money to pay Dak Prescott. They can do this. I think they made some bad decisions with other contracts, prior to this with Ezekiel Elliott and Jalen Smith, but it hasn't precluded them from paying Dak Prescott, and I don't think it's going to stop them going forward. You know, Mike talked about Ryan Tannehill's contract, $17 million, which looks hilarious now. Dak Prescott's contract is going to look cheap in a few years, too. That's the way things go in the NFL. Lock him in now before it gets more expensive, something they should have done in the past.
Yeah, and it's a good point. Mike, I have to hit you on that because, look, it just seems like everybody in the world is saying this should happen. This should come together. I know you talked in the last hour about maybe it comes down to the last minute. But at the end of the day, do you think they agreed to a long-term deal before the deadline?
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
I don't think it does get done because they made a fatal mistake a year ago. They had a lot more leverage. And instead of paying Zeke Elliott with 2 years to go when he's holding out in Cabo, they should have paid their high-character, productive winning quarterback. Then he is over the hump on the leverage, and this point bears repeating. He played for $2 million last year. It's easy to play for $31 million. And think about the leverage he would have next year. His number is only going to go up, not down.
Good job, Mike. I think you're smart, buddy. Way to go.
The ultimate compliment. There you go. Never another insult coming his way. All right, guys. Thank you so much. And I'll tell you, we talk about Dak Prescott over and over again. We talk about where he stands in all of this. Will the Dallas Cowboys pay him top dollar? Is he worth Mahomes' kind of money? We'll talk about that when we come back. Back with you on Get Up and Let's Get Up and Go with the NBA. Full-scale practices inside the NBA bubble in Orlando started on Thursday. The Magic were the first of six teams to formally get back on the courts, which have been built inside hotel ballrooms at Disney. And this, Tiger Woods making his first appearance on the PGA Tour since the restart, and that'll be next week at Memorial. Now, Tiger participated in a match back in May, but he hasn't appeared in a PGA Tour event since February 16th. And this story has been riveting all week. Julian Edelman says he's spoken with DeSean Jackson about his anti-Semitic social media posts, and they've agreed to meet in the future and share experiences. Yesterday, Edelman, who is Jewish, said that he told Jackson that if they were to visit the Holocaust Museum, he would then go with Jackson to the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Important move there. Montreal Impact head coach and French soccer legend Thierry Henry took a knee for the first 8 minutes and 46 seconds of his team's opener in the MLS Is Back tournament last night in the memory of George Floyd. Now, Henry also wore a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. And then this, the Zion Williamson case, a court motion and sworn affidavit filed by Zion Williamson's former marketing rep states that Zion's stepfather solicited and accepted a $400,000 payment before Zion's only season at Duke, which would have been an impermissible benefit, and made him ineligible. Now, in response to this, Zion's attorney Jeffrey Klein called into question the authenticity of some of the documents that were submitted. Here's what they had to say. Told ESPN, in part, the alleged agreements and driver's license attached to these papers are fraudulent, and neither Mr. Williamson nor his family know these individuals, nor had any dealings with them. This is a desperate and irresponsible attempt to smear Mr. Williamson at the very time he has the opportunity to live his dream of playing professional basketball. Well, all right, the quarterbacks got all the love this week, so did the running backs, and now we're talking receivers. We're counting down the top receivers according to league executives, and we start with Tyreek Hill at number five. Since 2017, he's got 15 total touchdowns where he ran 20 miles per hour or more, eight more than any other player. At number four, Odell Beckham Jr. He remains one of the best deep threats in the game as his 29 targets on throws 20 yards down the field ranked second last season. Now Arizona Cardinal, DeAndre Hopkins, number three. He made 112 catches in man coverage over the last two seasons. And that is second behind the guy at number two, Michael Thomas. He led the league with an NFL record 149 catches, finished with 1,725 yards, seventh most in a season all time. But guess who's coming in at number one? Julio Jones. He is one of four players all time with at least seven seasons of at least 1,100 receiving yards in his first 9 years. So let us talk this over. And by the way, look who's rounding out the top 10 right there. You like that? You got Mike Evans at number six, Devontae Adams at number seven, Keenan Allen weighing in at number eight, Chris Godwin, number nine. That's two Tampa Bay guys in the top 10, and Amari Cooper rounding it out at number 10. So let's bring our guys back in. Jeremy Fowler, Dominique is back with us, as is Desmond Howard. And Jeremy, I got to start with you because Julio Jones, overwhelmingly number one for most of the people you talk to, as I understand it.
Yeah, Ryan, I went into this process thinking Michael Thomas would push Julio Jones for that number one spot. It didn't happen. Jones got more than half the first place votes. One NFL coordinator told me he's simply an avatar. There is no one like him. He can beat you in all three phases of the football field. Complete receiver. The only knock on him is he's 31 years old. Occasionally they rest him. He takes a few plays off. But everybody who voted, most people thought that he was just more of a threat than Michael Thomas downfield.
Wow, 31-year-old avatar. Any NFL team will take that. Des, do you agree with the assessment on Julio Jones by these executives?
I tell you what, Ryan, I mean, that's an elite group of receivers. So when you start to try to pick them apart, it's like splitting hairs. Now, my problem with Julio Jones is the past three seasons, he's dropped 17 passes, 17 balls on the ground. That ties him for first in the league in that category. And he hasn't had a 10-touchdown receiving season since 2012. He's going to catch a lot of balls for a lot of yards, but he's not getting into the end zone at the same clip of some of these other receivers. I think Michael Thomas should be number one. And I would put DeAndre Hopkins at number two. And then I heard you guys talk about Odell Jr. earlier. My only problem with Odell, who has all the tools in his toolbox, is I just don't think he's getting all the everything out of his talents every time I see him play.
Okay, and that's what some executives were echoing on this, that he's just not giving it all. But I want to go back to Julio. Dominique, do you think he's the best wide receiver in the NFL?
I do, and I mean, Dez is right. We're splitting hairs. I think we would take any of these receivers at this point, but I think Julio is special because he is somewhat a combination of Michael Thomas with the deep threat ability of somebody like Tyreek Hill, and he's not quite as fast as Tyreek Hill, but we don't have to go back too far to think of the game when Julio Jones had 300 receiving yards. Like, that's a number that you look at for a quarterback for passing alone. Julio Jones had 300 yards in a game. That game alone puts him atop my list. He's a special player with a big body that can get away from people and break tackles. And I would say the touchdown droughts that he's gone through, like touchdowns is a little bit more like is a little bit more dependent on luck, I would think, than any the rest of the production that he gets. I think Michael Thomas is special, but I don't think that he compares to Julio Jones as far as his impact on the game.
So who would be your top five, Dominique? What do you think?
Yeah. All right. I think I'll go Julio still at number one. In a close second, I'll surprise you guys with Tyreek Hill. And maybe it's just a personal thing, but that speed, and Dez, you know, that speed is intimidating. And his ability to get off the press is something special. He's 20, almost 25 yards per reception when people press him in a league where the corners really like to get up and get up close to those receivers. And he breaks defenses in that way. When you go into the film room, you're preparing for Tyreek Hill. I put DeAndre Hopkins next because no matter who you put on him, you double cover him. He's going to impact the offense because he catches everything. Then I put Beckham at four. I know he had a bad year last year, but his first 3 years, as I said earlier in the show, are comparable to Randy Moss. He's somebody that you can build an entire offense around. And I put Michael Thomas at five. I know that's low considering his production, but it all goes back to the big playability. And as a defensive back, and as a defense overall, defensive coordinator, you're going to be concerned with a guy that can score a touchdown on one play more than you'll be concerned with the guy that's going to move the sticks on every third down.
I guess I could see that because when I saw Michael Thomas at five, I was like, what? But I you make a great point there. Des, what do you think about his list?
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
I definitely would put Michael Thomas at number one. I mean, Michael Thomas, he led the league in receptions, and he led the league in bags, too. He's the highest paid receiver, and that's because of his talent level and what he could do to a defense. I think he's number one. DeAndre Hopkins, I just love his all-around game. He's number two. At number three, I think I will actually go Julio Jones. I'll take him from one to three. Number four will be Tyreek Hill. Just like Dom said, listen, when you're lining up against Tyreek Hill, it's like you're lining up opposite a cheetah with a helmet on. I mean, he strikes fear in the hearts of defenders and defensive coordinators. So he has to be number four. And then I would put Odell Beckham Jr. at number five.
You know, it's just
I'll add some context here too, guys.
Go ahead, but Jeremy, it's I want to come to you, but it's just like a DB and a wide receiver to be on different pages. What are you hearing about this context, and also about Tyreek Hill, because he kind of is all over the map on the list.
Right, because I want to go back to Dominique's point. When a lot of these people are voting, especially coaches and players, number one for them is who scares you most in the game plan when you're preparing for the week. How scared are you and fearful of the guy you have to face up against? And so I talked to a veteran NFL cornerback who said Julio Jones and specifically Tyreek Hill are going to scare you a little bit more than, say, a Michael Thomas, despite his greatness. But you know he's going to catch 12 to 15 passes. He's going to get a lot of run in the slot, but he's not probably going to kill you for that 60-yard play like some of these other guys can.
It's interesting because I would think they would love that stability, that idea that I can rely on this guy no matter what, and he'll get me the catches I need no matter what, Jeremy.
That's more chances to make mistakes for your offense. A 15-play drive is one thing. A 3-play drive is much better for your offense. And on defense, I would love them to have a nice long drive. You might kick a field goal. You might fumble a snap. Something might happen. I'm going to just try to keep Tyreek Hill in front of me, and hopefully I can tackle him.
All right.
Right. Well, and the best young quarterbacks are the big play guys, Lamar, Mahomes. So you're counting on the receiver to make that connection, even if they're going to miss a few.
All right, guys, I got to leave it there, but thank you so much on that, because we got to talk a little bit more Dak Prescott. The Cowboys got a big decision coming up. We've been talking about it all week. Is he elite? Would you pay him top dollar or not? Why one of our experts says that he would. Coming back.
As we speak, I am wearing clothing older than Zion Williamson. Our blender is full. We have a big show coming up.
I've never seen somebody look that good in shorts that small. It made me a little uncomfortable.
It's Beetlejuice 2020.
What the hell are we doing?
We're having fun here.
The last spring college football game that was played in the Ivy League was 1877. Paul, what was that day like? I'm just kidding.
Patrick freaking Mahomes.
All talent is not created equal. I'm on another level. That's the bottom line.
What the hell are you talking about, Stephen A?
First of all, I'm sick and tired of you using that H word. That's not good for pastors. Number two, tighten up your collar, sagging a little bit. Number three, you can huff and puff all you want to. You ain't scared nobody. Number four, you're a former Dallas Cowboys, and y'all should be allergic to having conversations about championship talk.
Go ahead, Marcus. Final thought.
Now, I'm going to be the final thought, Greeny.
And the host has completely lost control.
Well, we got a big day today coming up on ESPN. First Take starting at 10:45 a.m., then followed by SportsCenter, The Jump, Jalen and Jacoby, highly questionable, around the horn after that. And then SportsCenter coming in at 6, and we cap off your night with SportsCenter one more time at 11 p.m. Eastern. And let's talk some Dak, because tick-tock, the clock is running out. Time has almost run out for the Cowboys and Dak Prescott to come to a long-term deal before the July 15th deadline. Now, Dak has signed the club's franchise tender, and that means that he's under contract and would face prohibitive fines if he doesn't report to camp. So here's Jeremy Fowler on where things stand.
I just checked on this, and one of the sides told me, look, if this is going to go to July 15th, if that's what both parties want into the final hours, we are prepared to do just that. So they're going to give this a go. They're going to try to do this in the final hours, but it's been on hiatus for the last few months. That's the problem. There's a lot to revisit here because I'm told Dak Prescott wants as close to a bulletproof contract as possible. It's not just about big glossy numbers or per year average. He wants a complete looking contract that can set up quarterbacks for not only him, but for the future as well.
Well, it could be a very interesting deal, and great reporting by Jeremy. Could come down to the wire. Let's bring back in Dominique Foxworth, Mina Kimes, Joey Galloway. Now, Joey, you played for the Cowboys. You played for Jerry Jones. If you're Dak Prescott, put us in his shoes. How would you be feeling at this moment, knowing this agreement hasn't been reached yet, hearing Jeremy's news that this could come down to the wire?
This deal is going to get done. I mean, this is much like Zeke Elliott. Jerry Jones enjoys the idea of you guys talking about them every single day. And then in the final hour, this deal will get done. They'll all be hugs and kisses, and Dak will be ready to go. And so as a player, you know it's a business. And I think that from the outside looking in, we always sort of get feelings involved in these situations. And, you know, and it's like, we know that the Cowboys are trying to get the best deal for the Cowboys. We know Dak's trying to get the best deal for Dak. And so it's not a personal thing as much as it's just business, but this will get done, and they'll be happily ever after this.
All right. All right, Joey Galloway, the eternal optimist. So allow me to be the pessimist, Mina and Dominique. Let's say, and Jeremy Fowler put this to us. He sent me an email on this, and I think it's a great question. I'll put you in the GM's chair. Let's say they tag him this year, obviously. Next year they let him walk. What do you think, Dominique, his free agent contract would look like?
Oh, yeah, he's getting Mahomes money at that point. He'll have so much leverage. Anyone who has the money to pay it and feels like they're a quarterback away, they will give him every bit of money that they have now. I am prone to agree with Joey, though. I think the deal does get done. The only thing I disagree with is I hope they aren't hugging and kissing. They better be reading the news right now. They shouldn't be touching each other. That better be an e-sign situation.
A wave is just fine as long as he's getting $35 million or more a year. Mina, what do you think? What is this? If they let him walk next year, what does this deal look like? Free agent wise?
Well, it actually is a little bit. In a normal world, I agree with Dominique, he would get an incredibly sizable contract, probably not Mahomesian, but something like what Kirk Cousins got. But, you know, in a year, it's not a normal world. We actually don't know what's going to happen with the cap in the NFL. So I imagine Dak might be inclined to take like a one-year deal, something equivalent to what he would have gotten in Dallas if he had gotten tagged twice. Ultimately, though, he is going to get paid a lot of money, right? Because he's a very good quarterback. I feel like a broken record. It sounds like we're going to be doing this for five more days, right? Please put us out of our misery, Dallas, please. But Dak Prescott is a good quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback, and we should probably retire the word elite. I'll say he's not a transcendent quarterback. There are two of those in the NFL, in my opinion, Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson. He doesn't transcend the offense around him, but he is a top 10 quarterback any way you slice it statistically over the last, you know, few years since he entered the league, and Dallas knows that.
Look at Dominique shaking his head, giving a side eye. Come on,
weigh in. I was with her, but I stopped listening when she stopped the list without including Lamar Jackson. Like, we worked together to write a piece about how transcendent Lamar Jackson was going to be before he got drafted. And now all of a sudden, after he wins MVP, now you're like, maybe not in that top tier.
Oh, Mina, go ahead.
Note the word choice, transcendent. I think Lamar Jackson is phenomenal. I think he's a top three quarterback in the NFL right now, but he does not transcend that offense in Baltimore, and you know that, Dominique.
Ooh. I mean, that offense in Baltimore is Lamar Jackson, and you know that, Mina.
Where is this going? Go ahead, Mina.
Around somebody, like that, it seems like he is the definition of it. No one's doing what he's doing. If you take Russell out of Seattle and put a random quarterback in, they don't fall nearly as far if you put a random quarterback in the situation in Baltimore. So I just feel, and the same thing is probably true for the Chiefs and Mahomes. Lamar's special, and you know it.
Mina, I want to give you the piece.
I want to
give
you, send it to you so you can read the piece that we wrote together, so you can be reminded of how good he actually is.
Mina, I'm going to come to you, give you the last word, but I want Joey to get in. Joey, I want you to break it up for a second. What do you think?
I don't know where we just went. We were talking Dak Prescott's contract. Next thing I know, Dominique's sending Mina an article that they wrote before. I don't know what happened, but it sounded good. But let me just say this. We got 5 days left. And much like I told Marcus Spears about Zeke Elliott and it would get done, this is going to get done. Mm. They're just sitting back and enjoying their time being talked about every single day on Get Up.
All right. Mina, I'll give you the last word.
He's so right about that. This is so classic Jerry Jones. And you know what? He won. Look at us. He's watching somewhere right now on his yacht, just sitting back. The deal might already be done. There's no question, I think, you know, it's the right thing for Dallas to do. They do not want to get in the same territory Washington got into with Kirk Cousins. And this team is too good to mess around. I think they are arguably the third or fourth best team in the NFC right now behind New Orleans and San Francisco. This offense is stacked. Some question marks on the defense. Get the deal done and win the division.
All right, and let's get there, by the way, before Dom and Mina start arguing over another piece. Let's talk about this, right? Because we talk about the Cowboys all the time. We talked about these player rankings this week. The Cowboys seem to be known for their talented offense. Here's a look at where they all ended up. You got Dak Prescott checked in as number 8 best quarterback. Zeke in the top 5 among running backs at number 4. And Amari Cooper just cracked the receivers list at top 10. Still, you know, the Cowboys, they joined the Saints as the only teams to place one player in each of the top 10 at the position of quarterback, running back, and wide receiver. But one voter didn't think Zeke could have been in the top 10 as he or she had Zeke ranked 11th. So Elliot went further on Twitter and he heard what was said and he said, whoever that is faded, LOL. Well, guys, look, these rankings, they beg the question, I think. Are the Cowboys as good as we thought they were? Mina, what do you think?
I think the offense is transcendent. I won't use the E word. And I think the defense has
again.
A lot of question marks. The Dallas Cowboys offense was the second most efficient offense in football last year. Great offenses are more likely to repeat year to year than great defenses. Oh, they went out and got CeeDee Lamb. I think the offensive line is still one of the best units in football, even with the loss of Travis Frederick. On the other side of the ball, question marks at pass rusher, yes. But I think with new defensive coordinator Mike Nolan, who did a great job with the linebackers in New Orleans, that group of linebackers is going to bounce back, and they should be good enough to keep pace with one of the best, if not the best, offense in the NFL.
Dominique, what do you think? Because, look, they're all these skill players. They're ranked so highly, but at the same time, do we overrank them? Do we overrate them?
Yeah, I mean, they were the second best offense as far as efficiency is concerned last year. The first best, I think, was Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, but that's a different conversation. I do think that the Dallas Cowboys skill players and all of their players, frankly, get a little boost from the media because we talk about them and we watch them and we care about them so much. But I don't think it's fair in this case. I think in this case, it's fairly accurate. If anything, some of these players should be a little higher. And I understand where Zeke's coming from, saying that whoever said that is faded, because last year was his down year. And he was still top of the league as far as rushing yards is concerned. So they are super talented, as Mina continues to say, on offense. The defense has some talent, but there are question marks, especially since they underachieved last year. So I think that these guys are probably, you average them out, they're probably fairly rated. Maybe Amari Cooper should be a little bit higher. Maybe Dak could be a little higher and Zeke maybe a little lower. But all these guys are special in their spots.
Joey Galloway, what do you think? Would you move them up a little bit and move them down?
I would leave them where they're at. I think that the Cowboys, more so than any other team in the NFL, they're highly talented, but they lose some games that you expect them to win. And I know the NFL is built on the idea that any team can beat any team. That's why nobody's gone undefeated since the Dolphins. But I'm telling you, the Cowboys are a team that any given Sunday, they're the most talented team on the field, but they don't always play to their level of talent. And so I think that's the only thing that holds them back. In NFL, you know, it is teams that believe they can win football games. And that's what the Patriots have done better than anybody else in football is they go into every game believing that they're going to win and they find ways to figure it out. The Cowboys go into every game with as much or more talent than anyone else. They hadn't figured out the other piece where it is we are going to win this game and we're going to figure out a way to do that no matter what.
Yeah, and for years the issue was that's because of the coaching. We'll see if that turns around right now. But, Mina, I want to come to you.
Yeah, I actually forgot something I want to mention. Joey reminded me about those kind of little things around the margins. The Cowboys were terrible on special teams last year. I think, if not the worst in the NFL, near the bottom. They brought in John Fassel from Los Angeles, one of the best special teams coaches in the NFL. Again, that sounds so small and minor, and these are the kinds of things we forget when we look at off seasons. But it's those little things at the margins that win games, those improvements. They also have the Rams' old kicker, Greg Legg. So I think the coaching change also is going to benefit this team in addressing what Joey said about them not showing up and winning games and kind of winning at the margins. I think they're going to benefit from that change as well.
I'll imagine if they showed up and won some of those big games this year, how far they could go. That could change everything, especially for Dak. If he's tagged, they don't have a new deal. Boy, that could work out really well for him next year. All right, guys, thank you so much. And tonight on ESPN, the MLS Is Back tournament continues at 9 Eastern with the defending MLS Cup champion Seattle Sounders taking on the San Jose Earthquakes tonight at 9 Eastern on ESPN. And the ESPN app. And First Take coming up next. They're going to continue this discussion on the Cowboys and whether or not Ezekiel Elliott is a top five running back. Is he?
Everything.
What a catch!
I should be in the 90s somewhere.
I need my X Factor bet.
I simply have no words for that, but I will try. That was amazing.
Well, thanks so much for joining us here on Get Up. Mike Greenberg will be back on Monday. Until then, have yourself a great weekend.